Hi, and welcome back to the Beauty of Conflict podcast. We know you're busy, and we want to make it easy for you to understand how conflict may likely be showing up in a way that's impacting your team negatively. We've recorded the first three chapters of our book for you to listen to for free. Get your free audio sample at thriveinc.com/free sample. That's thriveinc.com/freesample. Hi, I'm Chris Marie Campbell.
And I'm Susan Clark.
And we have a special guest today. Andrea Nakayama is joining us, and she is a functional medicine nutritionist and educator. She is also the host of the 15-Minute Matrix podcast and the founder of Functional Nutrition Alliance. Andrea is leading thousands of students and practitioners around the globe in a revolution to offer better solutions to the growing chronic illness epidemic. By highlighting the importance of systems biology, root cause methodology, and therapeutic partnerships, she helps historically underserved individuals reclaim ownership of their health. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. So excited to be with you both.
Yes. It's very neat.
There's a lot packed right in there in your bio. So, you know,
does it?
Yes.
Yeah. For our listeners, Andrea, it might be nice to share your backstory as to what really was the trigger for this kind of deep dive that you've been in for the last 20 years.
Yeah, and a huge second career change that happened for me over 20 years ago. So my late husband, Isamu, was diagnosed with a fatal brain tumor in April of 2000 when I was just 7 weeks pregnant with our first and subsequently only child. And so that really took a passion that I had for food and nutrition and cooking into this kind of what I think of as a boot camp, into really understanding what was going on in the body, what we could do with diet and lifestyle modification. He lived about 2.5 years. So that's 2 years longer than he was expected to live, and had some nice imprinting in our son's life. But then it really struck me that this was my passion and that I really wanted to work with people to help them understand not where nutrition takes the place of medical intervention, but where it can be supportive, not just of lifestyle, but also of what's happening in someone's medical situation. And I put myself back through school, left a career that was very established, and fortunate that I've been able to build an entire little empire. I've trained over 8,000 practitioners in over 68 countries in the methodologies that I developed to fill a lot of the gaps that I experienced in healthcare through that experience with my late husband.
Wow. That's a very powerful story and such incentive to want to learn, you know, and I love that he got to, you know, see his unborn son be born and spend time with him. How lovely in that regard.
Yes.
Do you have a question? Or?
Well, I mean, this may, and I was looking quickly to see if I got this right, but you put this into the reference point of functional medicine, right? And functional medicine is there, you know, we've had so many different words. We had integrative medicine, we have holistic medicine, and now we have functional medicine. And so say a little bit about functional medicine and how that plays into this.
I'm so glad you asked that question, because there are all these different terms and they mean different things. So holistic is a big umbrella where we're just saying, yes, and look at different things. Integrative medicine was born in the 1990s, and it really means the yes and in terms of the therapy. So an integrative medicine practitioner is going to say yes to your chemo and to your acupuncture. It's just recognizing that different modalities matter in the way we practice. So that means that different kinds of practitioners can be integrative in their approach, including a functional practitioner can be integrative in their approach. It's just there are different ways we have to recognize that diet matters. We have to recognize that community matters. We have to recognize that meditation matters. That's what integrative means. Functional was also born in the 1990s, and a functional approach means that we're looking through the lens of systems biology. So in a functional practice, we're recognizing that nothing exists on its own. We don't divide the body into ologies. So we can't just go to our gastroenterologist or our oncologist or our rheumatologist or our psychologist, that the gut's actually connected to the brain, which we now all know, that the hormones are connected to detoxification, which is connected to the gut. So that systems biology is core to a functional medicine and therefore functional nutrition practice. Also, and you said it in my bio when you introduced me, Chris Marie, thank you for that. There's also this notion that we're looking for the root causes. And I know that's an overused term these days, but it means we're asking why is something happening, not just what do we do about it? And we live in a culture that's very focused on just the what do we do about it? I have this symptom, I have this diagnosis, what do I do about it? Instead, we say, wait a minute, why is that manifesting, whether it's autoimmunity or cancer or Lyme disease or chemical sensitivities? We're saying why? And then we're in a very deep therapeutic partnership, recognizing that the patient or the client, depending on our scope, is an equal partner in their care, not just in the caring of themselves, but I always like to tell patients, look, there are two experts in the room and you're the only expert in you. And so I need your expertise in order to bring my expertise. So those three tenets, therapeutic partnership, looking for the roots, which means we ask why and not just what, and that systems biology are paramount to a truly functional practice. And I feel like the term functional medicine is being overused these days, being used in a lot of ways that aren't paying heed to the real roots of the practices.
And I'm really appreciating what you said, because I mean, my own experiences was a long time ago with cancer was where there wasn't really anything. There wasn't integrative. There wasn't holistic. And I was grateful and it's come a long way, because I think what you're basically saying now too, which is so critical, not only are practitioners encouraged through integrative medicine and holistic medicine to talk to each other and to consider each other and to look at the complements, but you're actually saying a practitioner in functional medicine has some sort of systemic view of the whole thing. Even if they're not a specialist in each of those areas, they at least have a deep-rooted appreciation for the fact that it's a systemic situation that needs. So they got to have some sort of, not just sending you over here to talk to somebody different, but they at least appreciate that, oh, this is a, I know enough about this to know that this is a part of what's going on. It's not.
Exactly. Okay. And it's not that we need to be an expert. Like I always say, as a functional medicine nutritionist, I'm not a medical practitioner. So if you're dealing with a medical situation, I need to be able to partner with a person who understands how to address that from a medical perspective. My job is to say, oh, wait, that condition, whether it's a sign, a symptom, or a diagnosis, or all of the above, exists in a terrain. My job is the terrain. And that terrain is really saying, wait a minute, that all wouldn't happen if there weren't imbalances deep down in the whole of the system. And I'm going to work to get into what I like to think of as the soil of the tree that's growing. So yes, I have to understand the system's biology enough to go, wait, we can't talk about your hormones without talking about your liver. And we can't talk about your liver without talking about your gut. Because you know what? Here's how they're connected.
I love that. That's great. I mean, I'm a big systems. I come back from also a family systems approach when I went through my education, and family systems, organizational systems, and it's the same applies in medicines. I just love it.
Well, I love included part of the system is a community.
Yeah.
I think so often we just look at this body as if what something's broken. When you're focusing on, we just focus on the what. Versus, hey, this person may feel like, I think even in your experience, there was a real breakdown in the relationships and conflict that wasn't dealt with, which was creating inner body.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
And so many practitioners don't even ask, what are the stressors that are going on in your life? And it's, oh my gosh, that is like so key to our
huge. Yeah. I always, my mantra is everything is connected. We are all unique and all things matter. And what matters is sleep and relaxation, exercise and movement, nutrition and hydration, stress and resilience, relationships and networks, spirituality, like all of that is going to impact the system's biology, which is the body, what's happening within us.
Right. And I think our view, certainly when I was an athlete, I just thought my body was a tool that should obey me. Right. And the whole breaking it up into all these different components. So I really like all the relational pieces that you're connecting in your soil lens.
Yeah. And I think we still think the body is something that should obey us. I mean, right, as we go through changes in our hormones, as we age, it's like, why are you doing what you used to do? What's going on here?
Yeah. It's so true. I can't have a saggy skin. No, it's not.
Exactly. Yeah. I want to be buoyant. Or trying so hard to, like, I was reading some article in the New York Times the other day about some gentleman who is trying to make sure that he stays like he was when he was 18 or something like that. And a whole, I don't even know if you saw this article, but it was like an incredible amount of investigation this person was doing to stay young. And it's not that, I mean, I get the whole idea of wanting to be as youthful as you can be, but that just seems like another whole lesson. And there's some beauty in aging too. There's some reasons for it. It's not just,
it's learning how to go through these stages and embrace where we are.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway, I just remember seeing.
I'm struggling with that. I'll just say.
I think we all do. I mean, I think it's a really interesting thing. I don't think we have good models. I mean, we don't have good models for different bodies. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So then when it comes to aging, this is one of the funny things for me about being a nutritionist in this time, because there's a lot in the realm of anti-diet culture, which I would like to rename anti-dieting culture, not anti-diet culture, body positivity, which is so important. But then we look at people who are sick and not getting better, and there's a need for interventions and actually listening to the body, as opposed to just bypassing it in favor of changes that aren't feeling good. So it's a complex world when we talk about the body, period. And then when we talk about making changes to how we eat or how we live, there's a lot of pushback right now, which is really fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, and even I think about diet in particular, like for myself, I mean, at that time for me, I did a macrobiotic diet, which was actually, I think it was a fairly new thing at that time. I found it really helpful. And yet I didn't stay on it. There was a point at which I reached where it was like, no, I need meat. Actually, I think it was because a friend of mine made me something that I just could not eat and I was okay. So I was like, okay, might be time to shift. And you know how often though, sometimes when I go back to my family of origin, I like to go back to a vegan diet because I think it brings down the stress level. And now that's probably, now I have a better relationship there. So I may not need to do it. But I also think it's not
black and white.
Not so black and white.
Exactly. And it's very individual, right? It's not, it's what does our body need to thrive? And that's going to look different for each and every person based on their circumstances. While you're going through a healing protocol, you may need to do a therapeutic diet plan. That may not be your forever way of eating.
Right.
And there may be places where you have to shift things for different reasons because you're experiencing something new or you notice something doesn't work for you anymore because your body shifts. And it's that fluidity that I think we have to embrace by tuning in, not just to what our body is telling us, which brings up the interesting point of conflict, but also tuning into what our needs may be at that time and not making it a diet in the classic notion of the word diet for weight loss, but actually embracing this is the way I eat because it serves me right now and it serves a goal, like I'm going through chemotherapy or I'm handling an autoimmune condition or I notice I'm sensitive to everything. Whatever it may be, there's a place for how we eat and how we live that can really serve us.
Yes.
I think it's so easy in our culture to say, oh, what's the magic bullet? The whole diet books. This exactly. is the one. This is the one. And what you said earlier in your three pieces of methodology, really, we're always looking outside of ourselves for, can you give me the answer? Can you give me the answer versus yes. actually partnering with ourselves, our body, whatever, our intuition to check in. Yeah, I don't think we're used to that at all.
No, I feel like I'm teaching in my newest iteration of my work. I train so many practitioners. I'm turning my attention back to the patient because I think we've forgotten how to be patients because we've forgotten how to be in our bodies. So we don't even know how to show up and advocate for ourselves because we're inundated. There's so much noise about what we should be doing, whether it's how we should be eating, what supplements we should be taking, what powders should go in our smoothies and waters and whatever, that we've forgotten how to say, this is how I feel. These are the symptoms I'm experiencing. This is when it started. And this is what I notice makes a difference. And this goes back, Susan, to your notion about family systems. I think that for me, that the functional nutrition timeline that I developed helps us slow down and really look at what is my family of origin? When did these things start? Mm-hmm. Am I in the world? How was I born? What deficiencies may I be experiencing? Whether that's a deficiency in a nutrient, like I'm not getting enough fiber or my vitamin D level is low, or in community or joy or love or laughter. Like, how do we know ourselves better to know how to feed and fuel ourselves and show up with that knowledge as opposed to telling doctors what to do that they, like, we know? Or just being in the completely passive realm of doing whatever is told to us.
Yeah, yeah. That's a big shift. Like one extreme or the other often shows up yes. versus something. And now one of your questions brought up this word that I didn't. Oh, omic. Talk about omics in your work.
We don't know what that means.
I don't know if I'm saying the right thing.
Yeah, omics. Yeah, you are.
But so I liked what it.
Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
Well, that idea that the same person, two different people may be bitten by the same tick, but they're going to have different reactions or different things. I think that struck me and I wanted to learn more.
I kind of bring everything back to that everything is connected. We are all unique and all things matter. So to me, the realms of science that correspond to that mantra are omics, right. precision medicine, and epigenetics. So those might be all new terms, but omics helps us to understand that everything is connected, right? Like everything is connected. That's what we know about the microbiome, about the genome, about the connectome. There's lots of studies in science of omics, and what they show us are the connections between everything. So it's sort of like that systems biology, recognizing that we don't look at one thing in isolation of another. That's really the simple notion of the realm or study of omics. It's the study of connection, which we can think of in community connection. We can think of in environment and connection. And as you said, Susan, it means that every single thing is impacted by every other thing. Like if we imagine the butterfly effect, right? The butterfly flaps its wings and there is a consequence. There's always a consequence for everything. So two people can be bitten by the same tick, smell the same fumes, whatever it is, we're all going to react differently because there's a lot of connected factors internally that are unique to each and every one of us. And to me, this is so beautiful that we can actually recognize that just because I have Hashimoto's, there's not one protocol that's going to work for all people who have the same diagnosis. When we look at the precision piece, so everything is connected, we are all unique, this brings us back to the realm of cancer because precision medicine is being used primarily in cancer and in pharmacogenomics. So understanding that, especially with mental health issues, different pharmacological agents, different drugs, work differently on different people because of the way their unique body responds to that drug. So we can't just say, oh, if you have breast cancer, here's the treatment, because the makeup of that cancer, just because two women have it in their right breast in the same spot, the makeup of that tumor cell may be very different. The better we target it, the better outcomes we have. And the targeting has nothing to do with the location of the cancer. It has to do with the makeup of the cells and how that exists inside the individual. And so we start to see the real beauty of individuality and why I can't have somebody come to me and say, should I intermittent fast? Or what about the keto diet? Should I eat macrobiotic? And it's like, well, who are you? Let me understand what we're trying to achieve and who you are. Did that answer omics and precision?
Yes. And let me just see. So omics is everything is connected and we're all unique in those connections.
Yes.
And then precision medicine is really looking at what's inside the tumor and the cell type, like really being more specific about how you're treating, even if it's the same with two women, how looking deeper into that.
Exactly. And the way it's being used primarily with cancer and now with drug therapies for mental health disorders is being able to look at somebody's genomics, what's going on with their genes, and what does that tell us about the precision practices? What is true for them? And you can start to see how this is what I love about true functional practices, that we're thinking about all that as opposed to saying, hey, you're depressed, or hey, you're going through menopause. Here's the thing you should take, without doing that deeper look at, wait, what's going on for you? Who are you? Is there some way we can address this that has nothing to do with drugs?
Right. Yeah.
Not for cancer per se, but like for other things. Yeah.
Could even be. I mean,
I'm not here to say that.
No, you're not going to say that. I did want to ask you one other question just from the questions we got, but a hype about testing in labs and functional medicine, and that you kind of have a different position. You say that we're over-testing in functional medicine.
Think we're over-testing. So I do believe in the notion that we need to look at labs. I think what happens nowadays in functional medicine too often is that the labs people are running are very expensive and very targeted before we need to get there. So my perspective is to look at the regular old labs that we're going to get from our doctors, because there's gross information there. We can tell if somebody's dehydrated. And if they're dehydrated, that's going to affect their iron levels, and that's going to affect their fatigue and their oxidative stress. It could affect their microbiome. So why run those other tests when there's more gross, meaning broader information that we could give the soil, so to speak, before we go to those specialty tests? So specialty tests are expensive. So that means that we're not talking about accessibility. We're definitely talking about people who have out-of-pocket money to spend on testing. And I just don't think it's necessary from the get-go. I think it's being done too broadly, too quickly. And we can use that testing, which I love, when we need it to get more information for clinical intervention. Is there information that we have right from talking to a person, right from looking at their regular old serum labs? Those are the labs your doctor is going to run that give us our first steps. And then we're going deeper when we need to, because we don't know what to do next and somebody's not better. So I just see it as more successive than throw everything. Let's do your genetic testing, your stool testing, your hormone testing. Like, all of that isn't necessary from the get-go when somebody's not sleeping, they have no community, they're going through a really stressful time in their life. Like, there's plenty of work to do from a functional nutrition perspective.
I love that, because I mean, we've been talking about this from body, from health, from everything else. And we work a lot in businesses. So I just want our business listeners to be listening to this too, because the same thing applies in business. People want to go into these deep dives into particular aspects of the of a business or the segments of a business, and they're not paying attention to the overall, well, you called it, I like that, that gives you a lot of gross information, like a large, you know.
And the stressors of failed project 3 months ago that's put stress on the business. And so people are all fighting again for themselves rather than working as a team. That's one of the things, because the stress makes us more selfish. We're focused on survival. And same thing happens in our bodies. We get stuck in that fight or flight. Yes. We don't do the grow, the rest and digest.
Exactly.
So things are breaking down, and we could do a lot of health, if out of goodness, if we recognize that piece. So I like how you're about it.
I mean, I'm a systems thinker too, right? Yeah. So my team at the Functional Nutrition Alliance uses some of the systems thinking that I've developed for clinical intervention for our business growth. I talk about it as the art of the practice in clinic, right? We assess, we recommend, we track. And that's the same thing we have to do in business. Assess, recommend, and track. We don't just do target practice. Like, oh, we have to first like step back, what's going on, and then determine from there.
Okay. So that, you know, I think you kind of have addressed this one, but I do think it's so relevant right now. Talk a little bit about how you see the state of chronic illness in our country, and is it different in other parts of the world? I imagine it is.
Yeah, I do see that there's a quick change happening in other parts of the world. So I'm going to talk a bit about autoimmunity, because I feel like this is a highly underserved population, because we don't know how to address autoimmunity because it is a chronic condition. So when I say autoimmunity, some people don't know what I'm talking about. So Crohn's, colitis, I have Hashimoto's, lupus, multiple sclerosis. There's over 100 different autoimmune conditions. We can consider Lyme even an autoimmune condition. Sometimes it is. So 75% of all people who have autoimmune conditions in the US are female. And that's really important for us to look at. And it's an increasing population of girls. And so we can start to make connections about the stress. And there's over 80 million people who have diagnosed autoimmune conditions. There's probably a lot of other people who are looking for answers to what's chronic or what they're experiencing, and they don't have a diagnosis for it, because it usually takes at least 3 doctors, at least 4 years to even get an autoimmune diagnosis. So this is one of the fastest growing instances of chronic health challenges in the US. This is starting to be replicated in other parts of the world too. They may be behind us in some ways, but it's fast growing. And it has to do with so many factors. It's not just one reason, but I think we're really talking about a lot of the reasons here. It's being in that constant fight or flight, not being in the rest and digest. If we think about conflict, autoimmunity is conflict within the body, because the immune system, which is trained by us, we have different layers of our immune system, 3 different layers, which I can talk about. The bottom layer is called the adaptive immune system. We've trained it to turn on our own cells, our own tissues. Not on purpose, obviously, but many conditions have primed the pump for those immune cells to be on the attack of us. And that is not something that our medical system has determined how to work with, other than suppressing the immune system, which we don't want to do, because we know that other things can happen when we suppress the immune system. We're more susceptible to bacteria, viruses, cancers, molds, all of the things when the immune system is suppressed. And so this is fast growing. It's happening to people who are younger and younger, but certainly women who are younger and younger. And I feel really passionate about how we change the dialogue around what power we have when we have an autoimmune condition or any chronic condition, because I'm going to use the same principle thinking for any chronic condition, how we change that discourse and take more of an empowered approach to how we do self-care.
I have to say, I've had chronic pain for decades. And one of the biggest things that I have learned is I have a limbic system impairment, which is the brain trying to protect me by sending me pain and tension. It's that same, it thinks it's helping me. It's like a three-year-old.
Yes, exactly.
So the process of rewiring that, and what happens is my stress comes down and I have to actually really remind my limbic system, no, you do not need to protect me by sending me pain. There's all this work I do.
Yes.
Wire my brain. And it's helped in a lot of different ways.
Absolutely. And good for you for recognizing that and going into that deep work with yourself and recognizing those connections. I think we have to slow down enough to really understand what our body is telling us. And you're well trained to do that because you were so in your body in such an intense way. But a lot of people don't know how to listen to their body and listen to the signals, and we're suppressing those signals all the time. That is our common culture. Suppress the messages of your body.
Right. Yeah. It even suppress your emotions and don't them, and which are in the body.
Yes.
Because we don't know, we aren't taught how to feel emotions. And so a lot of what we're doing is trying to get away from ourselves.
Yes. And get away from discomfort. Yeah. I can't feel that way. And I don't want to feel discomfort. Yes. And I don't want to not know. And so one of the things that I also experience with people is they think that when they get the diagnosis, that they're going to have the answers. And when it comes to a chronic condition, you get the diagnosis and you're pretty much in the same place you were when you didn't have the diagnosis. But I think our culture also tells us that when you get that label, you'll know what to do. And unfortunately, that's not the case, at least from the medical vantage point.
Well, and I think people think, I get the diagnosis and then you'll know what to do.
Exactly.
So again, I'm putting my power outside of myself, and it just doesn't work.
I mean, I truly believe that one of my best gifts was actually not a great moment in my life, but when my medical team was like, we don't have any alternatives. So you need to figure out how to die. And the idea being, oh, no one's going to tell me what to do and you don't have an answer. That's just okay. I have to choose to do something different. But it also really brought home, because I also heard a lot of messages about you're responsible for your health. That was kind of the alternative thinking, was a lot of that. And all I could hear was, I am to blame.
Yes.
That's all I could hear was, and then that's a whole different thing to realize responsible is a word, is really response able. Yes. I am able to respond, whether it be, and that, I mean, that is true in with the health issue, with diet, with work, with anything, but it is such a tricky place to get to because you have to be in the present moment to really understand, able to respond versus being blamed for your illness.
And suppressing how you feel and aren't in your body.
Yeah.
It's really hard to be in the present moment.
Yeah, because exactly.
First thing I have to do to be in the present moment is actually feel my butt and feel my back.
Yes.
I have to land.
And go. And even as we're talking and we can see each other, and I know that people can't see us, but we're moving back and forth, right? And so when we're in our body, we're moving back. That's that parasympathetic. When we're looking for the answers and that's all we're seeking, we are in the sympathetic. We are not able to be in the rest and digest. And so what I find with people that are experiencing chronic pain, chronic illness, chronic conditions, is they're stuck in that sympathetic state because they're looking for the answer as opposed to saying, wait a minute, how do I step back and take stock of what my body is actually telling me so I can go forward with more intention, with more responsibility to myself. And it's not about blame. It's about actually self-knowledge, self-awareness. What I also see is that people are just stuck in thinking it's all or nothing. And so they think like, I felt good when I did the autoimmune paleo diet and I was eating 8 cups of fruit and vegetables. So if I say eat the rainbow, they think they have to eat 8 cups of fruits and vegetables. I'm like, I don't care if your red is 3 goji berries, like eat some red. How do we think about how we loosen the reins of responsibility to pay to all of the things that feed and fuel us, as opposed to doing it perfectly?
Love that. It's so true around health and diet and it is also our biggest threat in business right now. People are looking for the answer. Our business world, our
economy
is stuck in fight or flight. And it's no wonder.
This is what you said. Lean back and what is this telling me?
COVID gave us a moment, which was a global moment to sit back.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we learned enough from it.
We clearly forgot. In the realm of nutrition, I'm like, where did the conversations about vitamin D and zinc go? I just don't understand. They were up for a while. They're really important, but somehow they just disappeared. Right. So I think you're right. There were lessons that were coming up. And there was also, I know a lot of people felt a lot of isolation and a lot of loneliness, but there was a poignant moment of collective experience that is unmatched in history. But we were all going through something and we lost. If we go back and we think about those moments, yes, there was a lot of isolation, but whoa, we were all kind of coming to grips with something at the same time.
Yeah. Creates a sense of connection.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, so Andrea, everything is connected. We're all unique and everything matters. And for maybe our listeners out there who may be struggling with a physical issue, do you want to provide them one, just a simple next step? And then also, how can they reach out to you or learn more about your work?
Yeah, I'm going to give us one of my favorite mental models so that I can frame my recommendation. So we've been referring to this quite a bit, and I've said soil and terrain, but any sign, symptom, or diagnosis you have or that you're experiencing is a branch. And if you envision a tree, that tree has many branches on it. The signs, symptoms, and diagnoses exist up there. If we focus our attention on the branches, we're never really going to nourish the healing of the tree. So we want to go deeper down. We want to go to what I call the three roots. The three roots are our digestion and inflammation. And each of those roots exists in soil. If you have any chronic condition, all three roots have been activated in some way. We don't have any control over our genes, we got them, but we have some influence over our genetic expression. That's what's called epigenetics. And that circle of influence, if we take from Stephen Covey, our circle of influence gives us some place to focus our attention is food, movement, environment, and mindset. Those epigenetic factors actually influence the expression of our genes. So where can we focus our attention? One place that we can say, I'm not going to deal with all of those things, but can I, in my food, commit to eating fat, fiber, and protein at every meal? Easy. Or I commit to thinking about the rainbow when I eat rainbow colors from natural sources? Keep a little journal, don't have to track what I eat, but what colors did I eat today? There's so much power in these little things that we can do. And if mindset or movement speaks to you more, there's things we can do there. But bite-sized chunks, I always like to say, slow it down to speed it up. When we go too fast, too soon, we can't stay there. But when we go slow and steady, we do win the race. So that's the model to think through and to recognize that everything does indeed matter. Pick one thing.
I love it. And I love it because that whole thing of the epigenetics, it's not what they taught us, that your genes seal your fate. All these things, food, environment, movement, and mindset. Definitely activate your, it goes and says, turn this gene on and turn that gene down.
So turn this one up, turn this one down, right. Turn it on, turn it off. And that's why genetic testing only tells us the backdrop. It doesn't tell us what's actually happening. And so people who are getting too attached to that, it's not what is, it's the potential of many things that actually don't even work together.
Right. And I can see so many applications, the same thing, because we do health, but it's also in business. I could just see going too fast. We're solving this and not really slowing down and saying, wait a minute, we're in a stress reaction. this may not be the right thing to do. So.
Exactly. So where people can find me is nakayama.com. That's a lot of A's in there.
<You'll> put it in like the show.
And yeah. It's just such a pleasure to talk with you both.
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Delightful. I
think we could keep going.
I know.
Again, sometime.
I bet too.
Okay. Right. Until next time.
All right. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Susan here. As a coach, a lot of my time is spent helping clients speak up in a direct and honest way in their relationships at home and at work. Chris Marie and I decided to create a speak up kit to help you do that for yourself. It's the best of our best work that we've gathered to help you. To learn more, go to thriveinc.com/speak up. That's thriveinc.com/speak up.